Hello, everyone. Good evening. All right. So David finds out that Avshalom has been killed. Right. Now, we have seen already in Shmuel Bet how David processes bad news and good news together. The death of anybody's son is obviously always bad news. But the death of Avshalom is clearly the kind of news that's like a Shachianu. It's the kind of news that you announce an end of a world war. I mean, it was a civil war in Israel. Right? There should be a celebration. All right, but the king's son was killed. Let the king just connect and process those two together. We saw three times in the beginning of Shmuel Bet when Shaul and his three sons were killed, which made David to be the sole king of Israel. Well, at least he should have been, but he became certainly the king of Yehuda at that time. But David reacts only with great sadness, right? The Amaleki kid who informs him about that, he has him killed for daring to suggest that he actually killed the king. And then when Avner is killed by Yoav, which, you know, however you want to read the, whether it was a true peace pact that he signed with Avner, we'll never know. But David excessively mourned the news of Avner's death. And then when Ishbosheth was assassinated, which certainly paved the way for David to have full reign, literally, over his people, he also mourned, and he also killed the people who told him that they made it happen. So these are three cases where in each one there's you know, if there's a halacha, we might have said you should say shekhanu v'kimanu v'giyanu l'zman hazeh. You know, it may sound equally morose, but the halacha says that if someone loses, let's say someone's father passes away and he's about to inherit, or he just inherited. As soon as the father dies, the inheritance automatically kicks in. There are two brachas to make, Baruch Dei Nehemes and Shechianu V'Kimanu V'Giyanu L'Zman Hazeh. Right? Imagine you say Shechianu the minute you hear about the death of a parent if you're going to inherit. Right? The poskim agree that although it sounds like that in the Gemara, that you should wait till after the funeral to make that second bracha. But you get the point, is that David has already taught us how he processes bad news and good news together. So there's bad news here. David's son died. But that's good news. The civil war is over. But David only makes issue with the bad news. Okay, to the point that it elicits Yoav's rebuke. We did this last time. Yoav tells him in Pasuk Vav, Vayavo Yoav el HaMelech, and we're in chapter 19, verse 6. Perigutes pasuk vav vayavo Yoav el hamelech habayis vayemer hovashta hayom es pnei kol avadecha amamaltim es nafshecha hayom veis nefesh banecha v'nosecha v'nefesh noshecha v'nefesh pilagshecha. You have shamed and insulted all the people that risked their lives to walk over the Yarden, to cross over the Yarden from Jerusalem. That's not a short walk to go from Jerusalem all the way down to the Dead Sea. And all those people who did this with you, you've just shamed them by so excessively mourning at the one who would have killed you and all of them. So he says the following: Le'ahava es sonecha, v'lisno es ohavecha. You love your enemies and you hate your friends. Right? You love your enemies and you hate your friends. Sounds like Yeshayahu complains to the people who make bitter to be sweet, and they make sweet to be bitter. Matok mar, or mar matok. Okay, so David is rebuked by Yoav for this for only stressing the bad part of this news, without in the very least showing some degree of gratitude for all the people who risked their lives for you. Right? Would you like the alternative that he should live and kill everybody? Okay. So that is Dove's initial reaction. Okay. And then Yoav tells him, "Va'atokum tzevedaber alev avodecha." You have to go and speak to the people. David has two tasks. One is to assure that the people who supported him, the people of Yehuda, especially the ones who did not remain in Yerushalayim, the people who followed him into exile, right, that those people feel that they made the right decision. But perhaps even more difficult, and this, I think, is part of some history that took place just around this time of the year in the secular calendar, to end the Civil War. Right, you didn't have cell phones, and you didn't have the proper communication to get the right type of information from the politicians, the people in charge. Right. It was Grant and Robert E. Lee who were part of a surrendering force to end the Civil War. Right. Grant was acting under instruction from the president, Lincoln, but Lee didn't know what to make of his situation. The government in Richmond had collapsed and he was basically winging it. Subsequent books have described what Lee was expecting at that time and what he was hoping for at that time. But I explain why I'm talking about the Civil War is because Israel had just experienced the Civil War. And, the nation has to get back together. Right? We have 11 tribes in Israel that got behind someone who, in the end, wanted to kill the king. How do we bring that nation back together again? Right. So what Lincoln did, anticipating that there would be this need, he took a vice president for a second term from the South. All right. Tennessee was one of those, borderline places, but still it was a southern nation, southern state. So and after Lincoln was killed, Andrew Johnson made a valiant attempt to try to, to as great an extent as possible, bring the South together. This is what David has to do in our chapter. Okay, and Yoav prods him to do it. Okay, to try to reconstruct, not unlike what was going on between Lee and Grant at the end of the Civil War. The books I told you before indicate that Robert E. Lee, thought that Grant was going to imprison the soldiers, and that he was going to actually take jail people for what they did. All right, so they negotiated that the type of amnesty, and that the soldiers could each take a mule home and some seeds to plant for the next harvest. And Grant was in the writings of Lee after the war quite magnanimous in doing his part in assuring that the nation could be healed and could be, who knows what would have happened if the president wasn't assassinated, but that's our history as we have it. And David is convinced by Yoav it's time to rebuild. Okay, so let's start where we left off, which is that the king turns for pasuk test. V'yakom ha'melech v'yeshev b'sha'ar u'l'chol ha'am yigidu l'mor. Hinei ha'melech yoshev b'sha'ar v'yavo kol ha'am l'fnei ha'melech v'yisrael nas ish lo halav. You see what's missing in this pasuk, right? The king did as Yoav suggested. The king sat down at the gate where everybody was waiting, listening to the king mourn for Avshalom. And the king just sat there. Right? Notice what he didn't do. It wouldn't have taken a very long speech. Right? One of the most famous speeches in United States history was written in a few moments on a train by Abraham Lincoln, called the Gettysburg Address. Right? David could have said a few words, but it doesn't even say he talked to the people. He just sat there. He just sat there and let the people walk by and pay respects, pay homage. Okay. You know, David did not get the respect he deserved in Shmuel Aleph. Right? When the people confessed to David in Shmuel Bet, we always knew, even when Shaul was king, that you would one day be king. Yeah, so why didn't you stick up for me? Why didn't you stand up for me before Shaul? Why did everyone support him? Even to the point where you informed wherever I could be found. But God was always one step ahead. Okay. And Shaul, who had killed all the Kohanim, but one, the one Kohen that survived, went over to David's side and he had the Urim V'Tumim. Right? So that made him, you know, David always have one step ahead of Shaul. Okay. Right. So the people just simply walked past. Now that lashon nos ish la'olav is the lashon in Tanakh for what people do when a war is lost. Right, by Sisera, when a war is lost, and everyone on one particular side sees that their general or their king even was killed, they all rush home. They all, you know, they don't want to fight anymore. They want to get home. They want to survive. The war is over. We lost. Let's get out of here. Right? The author of Shmuel is really trying to tell us something here. David's side won the war, but David clutched victory from the jaws of defeat from the jaws of victory. Right? Okay. And the Tanakh informs us of that by describing the people going back home with the description that normally in Tanakh follows a loss in war. This is supposed to be good now. Nadon b'chol shivtei Yisraelim or ha-melech yitzilani mikaf oivenu v'humi latinu mikaf plishtim v'ato barach min ha-aretz me'al Avshalom. You see such an amazing point of human nature in this pasuk. It's amazing. I mean, look at you have 11 tribes that until just a few days ago were siding with someone who wants to kill the king. And now it's expedient to turn the other way. So people act in their own interests. Right, the butler doesn't remember Yosef when it doesn't serve him, but as soon as it serves him, we can either find his faith or maybe introducing someone to the king who can interpret his dreams. Now I remember. We have poppycock. He remembered every single day. He never forgot. It was just convenient for him to remember it, to tell the king. So too, the people here, they're two-faced. They know all along. They knew in Shmuel Aleph what David was. But you know what? You don't side with the one you think is right. You side with the one you think who will win. I mean, I'm just saying what people do in this book. Right? It's a political book. And the people all just recently were on the side of someone who wants to kill the king. Right? So you say, okay, Avshalom died in the battle, right? Let's now bring David back, you know, to be king. Right, let's all acknowledge that he is our king. Okay? Right, so David informed his two Kohanim. One was named Tzadok, and the other was named Eviatar. Right? Tzadok was from the line of Elazar. Eviatar was the line of Itamar that went through Eli. Right? Sure. Okay. So he says, Dabru el ziknei Yehuda lemor. Go speak to the elders of Yehuda and say to them, Lamati yu achronim la shivas hamelech el beso, udvar kol Yisrael ba'al hamelech el beso. So it seems that the people of Yehuda were falling behind in their duty of reinforcing David's kingship. Why? Oh, they might have felt, listen, we were the ones who went past the Yarden. We don't have to prove anything. You guys have to prove something. Right? Achai, atem atzmi uvesori atem, belamati yu acharonim la shivas ha-melech. Right, so Tzadok and Eviatar, who are not from Shevet Yehuda, of course, they're Kohanim, Shevet Levi. Right? Okay, and they're saying, why should you be the latter ones? Not Lecharonim does not mean the last ones. Acharonim means the latter ones. Lo Shivas HaMelech. Right? Acharon does not necessarily mean the last ones. It says that Yaakov put the Bilhah and Zilpah's children in the front, and then Acharonim with Leah's children, and then Acharonim was Rachel and Yosef. Wait, if Leah was the Acharon, how can you have Acharon, something after Acharon? Okay, that's how it is. But that's what it means here. All right. V'lamasa tomri halo atzmi uvisariyata. That's the Shmuelism. That terminology only appears in Rus, Shoftim, Shmuel, but also once or twice in Melachim. Right? Do you see what David is doing? Now you have to be careful. Don't diss Yoav in this book. Right? Good people get killed for that. Right? David appoints. This is an amazing appointment. This is tantamount to appointing Robert E. Lee as the head of Union forces after the Civil War. Okay? All right. Robert E. Lee, by the way, was supposed to, if there wasn't a Civil War, was supposed to lead the Union forces. Just that he was, he was living in the South, and he was drafted to be the Southern forces. Okay, so Amasa headed Avshalom's forces in trying to kill David, and now that Avshalom is defeated, who does David make the head of his army? He makes Amasa, the traitor. Right? This does not make Yoav happy, right? One time earlier in Shmuel Bet, when David accepted Yoav's peace treaty, that was also bad news for Yoav, right? He accepted Avner's peace treaty. Right? Yoav hated Avner because Avner killed his brother in that war game in the beginning of the book. Avner was treacherous. He appointed Ish-bosheth king. Right? And Avner is basically going to take his place. Right? Avner is a much more seasoned soldier than Yoav. So Yoav has him killed. Okay? Yoav has him killed because you don't mess around with Yoav in this book. You have to ask a question of Amasa just as much as you have to ask a question of Avner. Don't these two know, especially Amasa, he knows already that Yoav killed Avner. Don't these guys know that Yoav is a mortal threat? You know what I'm saying? If you're in the FBI, you're in the special forces, and you know someone has it out for you, you probably would be wise to stay from being secluded with that person, wouldn't you? Right. So why does Avner? Why did these guys let go of their guard with Yoav? Yoav is such a loose wire. He's a loose cannon. Don't they know that allowing yourself to be secluded with Yoav is forfeiting your life when he doesn't like you? Anyone have any thoughts on that? Camelia, what would you say?
Maybe he's not the kind of person who would attack you if you're right there with him. He would want to stab you from the back.
Well, but you know, by Amasa's time, he knows that Yoav has killed quite a few people like that, you know, from the front in the fifth rib that kills instantly. Yoav is a trained killer, and he's you don't want to cross him.
Yeah, but if he knows you're waiting for it, maybe he won't dare. Maybe he just wants to catch you by surprise. Who knows?
Well, he did catch them both by surprise. That's exactly the point. You see, in each case, Yoav is together with the person who's about to be murdered. In the case of chapter 3, it's Avner. In the case of our chapter, it's Amasa. Amasa, who's his, they're all cousins. Right? Amasa's father, Yoav's mother, and David are siblings. Got that? So Amasa knows that Yoav would have it out for him. But he is so sure that Yoav, even the second time around, there's no way Yoav would so compromise his status with the king by killing me. Avner certainly felt that. Because after Avner came to David's palace to make a peace pact, for David's chief of staff to commit an assassination, everyone in Israel is going to think that David ordered that hit. That's why it says that David mourned so excessively for Avner. In the last passage, it says, and everybody knew that David did not command Yoav to kill Avner. So why didn't David have Yoav killed? Yoav killed the Amaleki for even exaggerating that he killed the king. He killed Rechav and Baana for killing Ishbosheth, right? Why wouldn't he kill Yoav for killing Avner and ruining David's chance of uniting the kingdom right there? I don't have a great answer to that. It could be that David's sister, Tsruya, prayed incessantly on behalf of her son. Right? Yoav's mother was David's sister. Right? And following, it could be that David's sister beseeched him and David made her a promise, okay, I won't have your son killed. Right? Plus, by this time, Yoav has a certain piece of goods on David. You know what I'm talking about, right? Leon, you're on mute.
He knows about Bathsheba's husband and the.
Oh yeah, he's made 10 copies of the letter that told that says where, and they're hidden in safe deposit boxes all over Israel.
Right.
And with clear instructions of what to do if I die a mysterious death at the hands of the king. Right? In the end, David feels powerless to do anything to Yoav. He instructs his son, Shlomo, to take care of business. Right? Sound familiar? It's the Haftorah of Parshas Vayechi.
Okay.
So Amasa is now tasked with running the army. Okay? And it says clearly, Tachas Yoav. I don't like this Yoav anymore. Right? He's a live wire. He acts on his own. Doesn't take instruction. So everybody's heart turned. Look, you know, people are sheeple. You know? What do? You know, you just tell them who to serve and they'll serve them. Right? You serve, you know, okay, we'll serve Avshalom, okay, we'll serve David, okay. Right? Now that Avshalom has been dispatched, now everybody says, okay, it's time to serve David. Okay? Vayashav HaMelech, I'm reading Pasuk Tet Zayin, verse 16 in chapter 19. Vayashav HaMelech v'yavo ad hiyardein v'yehuda b'ha gilgala l'leches dekres HaMelech l'havir es HaMelech es hiyardein. And an entourage of people came to greet the king to accompany him across the Yarden. It's a very dangerous place, this part of the Yarden. And now comes a blast from the past. Not too far in the past, but Shimi ben Gera. He was the Benjaminite who cursed David as he was fleeing Avshalom. Right? Moshe ben Yamin. He kept cursing, throwing rocks at David. Right? Kicking up dust. Right? Shimi ben Gera ben Hayimini Asher Bacharim Vayeredim Ish Yehuda Likras HaMelech David. Now it shows here that he was quite the influential man because it says the Elef Ishimo Binyamin. 1,000 men with him. He commanded quite the group. Vitziva Nar Beis Shaul, Bachameshis Asarbanav, Vesrim Avadav Ito, Vitzolchua Yarden Lifnei Melech. And Tziva, remember Tziva, the guy David told to split the field? We've had a lot about that. Tziva, the lad of from the house of Shaul, and he had 15 sons and 20 avodim. That was the size of the staff that was put in charge of taking care of Mephibosheth. Right? They too traveled into the Yarden, passed over the Yarden for David. Avraha Avara La Aviris Beis Hamelech La Sos Tov Beinav. Mishimi Ben Gera Nafal Ifnei Hamelech Ba Avra Ba Yarden. And when David crossed over the Yarden to get back towards his capital and his home, Shimi Ben Gera fell by his feet. Okay, you know what's going to happen here. V'yomer El HaMelech, Al Yachshov Li Aduni Yavon. He begged him, he's speaking in third person, he's being very subservient. He has a lot of kapara to do, right? So he begs him, please don't take it out on me from what happened to me before. Shimi ben Gera never felt the need to do this until now because he was hoping perhaps that Avshalom would win the war. But then when he saw that Avshalom did not win the war, right, he begs the king. I'm sorry, I just read that. Okay, don't take to heart all those things I said and all those things I did. Now, was the king allowed to be so forgiving?
No.
So the Gemara says, Melech Shemochal al Kvodo in Kvodo Machul. Right? This would certainly qualify as a relinquishing of one's Kavod. Right? Okay. Right, so Shimi ben Gera is acknowledging I've sinned, right? And he's begging the king not to remember the way that Shimi ben Gera behaved. Okay. Now you always know that when the things like this go on publicly, right? And so David has to be very careful with public displays. Okay, he already went sort of off the deep end with respect to Avshalom. What's he going to be with Shimi ben Gera? Is he going to be magnanimous? Is he going to be tough? Right? So Bayan Avishai ben Tsruya Bayomer Hatachas Zos Lo Yumas Shimi B'Kiki Leolis Mashiach Hashem. So Avishai, Yoav's younger brother, pipes up and says, "Shall this man remain alive? If he curses the king of Israel, should the Mashiach Hashem? Surely that should deserve the death penalty." Right? Remember when Jezebel fabricated testimony that would have Naboth killed? Anybody remember the testimony? You don't have to use a euphemism. He said, Naboth cursed the king and blessed God. It uses euphemism both. He blessed the king and God. Now, in terms of getting killed, I'm using a euphemism, of course, blessing the king is enough to get you killed. Blessing God is enough to get you killed. I'm saying blessing is a euphemism. It really means cursing, but the Gemara doesn't want it. Torah doesn't want to use that. In the Tanakh, it appears that way. It appears as a euphemism. Right? In Eov also, it says that Eov was worried that his children were blessing God in their bad behavior. Right? Okay. They had to say that he also, cursed God, cursed the king, because then the king receives all of the subject's property, which is what the king wanted, which was what Jezebel prepared for him. He wanted the vineyard. And after they stoned Naboth to death, she told her husband, Alei Reish, go up and inherit your land. Okay. So, Vayan Abishai ben Tzruya v'yomer, should this man live? How could a man live after cursing the Mashiach Hashem? Right? David, you're making a bad precedence here. Abishai tells him, if you let him live. Yemer David, ma liva lachem b'nei Tzruya. What do I need from you, sons of Tzruya? First, Yoav kills my son. Now you want to kill Shimi. I'd rather turn an enemy into a friend. Itili hayom l'satan. Hayom yumas ish b'Yisrael, ki halo yadati ki hayom ani melech al-Yisrael. I don't have to worry about any of this. I know I'm king. I know what the people are prepared to do to defend me. Right? This is wishful thinking. This is a good question. What could make all these people turn on a king who had done so much for them? Is this what we're capable of doing? Really? Just like that? To support the king, to kill it, have the king killed? Right. David is magnanimous. And he says, Ki halo yadati ki hayom ani melech al Yisrael. I know I'm king. I don't have to do anything to prove my position. David does have this characteristic humility. Okay. I don't have to kill Shimi for me to know that I'm back to being king. You don't have to have, you were worried that what my sense is going to be. So he tells him, "Vayomer Melech al Shimi, lo tamus, veishevalo amelech. You shall not die." Now he means you shall not die today, but David arranges for him to be killed by Shlomo. And he tells him, "Don't leave this place, not for anything." And he did leave. He left. I'm sorry, he left in the beginning of Melachim Aleph to return two runaway slaves. Right? When the prophet, Achian Shiloni, when Shlomo himself learned that he and he crossed over the border of Israel to retrieve his slaves. So David had him killed. I'm sorry, Shlomo had him killed. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, now let's see what happens with Mephibosheth. Okay, Pasuk Chof Hei. Umefiboshes ben Shaul yorad likras hamelech. The loa saraglov, the loa sasfamo, vespagadov lochi base, liminayom leches hamelech alayom ashabav shalom. I love when this happens. This pasuk is cited in yesterday's Daf Yomi. Right? And it says, veosisas tsiporneha, regarding the Ifas Toar. Gemara wants to know what do we mean by the osisa, make her nails? What does it mean to make someone's nails? To cut it, make them go long? So here, the Gemara tries to learn from here. It says, Mephibosheth ben Shaul yorad likras hamelech velo asa raglav velo asa sfamo. Right? He didn't make his clothing and he didn't make his mustache. Huh? Does it mean to make in this context? It means that he came in looking unkempt. He had prosthetic, maybe he had some type of crutches. Okay, and he looked unkempt. He looked like he hadn't groomed himself in a long time. Okay, it says that his face was all disheveled, right? His beard was too long. His clothing needed washing. The repetition of the word Mephibosheth sounds like he's talking to a child. What did you do today, Mephibosheth? So the king says, why didn't you leave Yerushalayim with me? Now, can anyone here listening to these words give an answer to this question without looking ahead?
How was he? Wasn't he not fit? To go?
Yes, I was not fit to go. How can I travel with my prosthetic limbs and all the way I walk to make it across the Yarden?
There's hills there. It's down.
Oh, I mean, that's ridiculous. Yes. Why would you think that I'm able to do that? Now, Mephibosheth does not mince any words here. He knows where this is going and he knows what he has to do. Says Ve'yomar Adoni HaMelech Avdiri Mani. Right? My servant tricked me. Ki Amar Avdecha Ech B'Sholi HaChamor Be'erkav Olea Be'alei Be'leches HaMelech Ki Piseach Avdecha. And I said, you know, if I go to meet you in the camp or at the Yarden, then that's proof that I could have made my way out, you know, with you. Here I am. Right? But it's different. This is not in the heat of a battle. I made my way over slowly. Right? You know I'm crippled. This is not an easy thing for a cripple to do. Vayiragel b'avdecha el Adoni HaMelech. Wow, you see that with verb? Vayiragel? Right? Yeragel, he slandered me. Okay. Aduni HaMelech kemalach ha'elokim v'aseh tov b'einecha. King is like an angel following every word of God. So you please will do what you think is best. We had this terminology before already. Also, Kamalach Elokim. Remember when the woman from Tekoa told David a parable about her two sons, the two non-existent sons? So she tells that talking to the king is like talking to the mouth of an angel. Malach Elokim. Okay. Ki lo haya pasuk chavtes. Ki lo haya kol beis avi ki iman shem mavis ladoni hamelach. Vatoshes es avdecha ba'uchle shulchanecha. Ma yesh li od tzedaka v'lizoko del hamelach. It says, my family has gained very much from your largesse. Right? My father was your best friend. This is Yonah's son.
Yes.
This is Yonah's son's son. Okay. And he says that my family, I know, was an anshe mavis. They tried to kill you at every turn. Right? But you know, it's not the Jewish way. It's definitely the Gentile way in the Tanakh. That when anybody rebels against the king, and anyone has to be killed off to make sure that the king has a smooth rule, they kill off all the children also. Even the young ones. Think of the Romanovs, if you will. They kill off everybody. They don't want someone getting out of jail 20 years from now, or someone getting out of hiding 30 years from now and being reinstated by the popular movement. Okay. He says that even though my family has been anshe mavis to you, I know what they tried to do to you in Shmuel Aleph. And yet I beg your mercy. What do I have to ask of the king? What can I ask? I'm just happy that you made it home safely. Why should you speak anymore? Amarti ata. Bitziva Tachleku Esasade. Haven't I told the two of you what to do? Well, actually, David never said this. Okay. I said you should split the field. The field that originally belonged to Shaul, who was bequeathed by David generously to Shaul's grandson. And when Tziva accused Mephibosheth, David said, okay, the field is now yours. And now that Mephibosheth comes back, and so he's getting something of a bargain, because until now, David said that the whole field should belong to Tziva. And here he's telling Mephibosheth, okay, I told you already, take half the field. David never said that. So it's as if David is making up things as it goes along. Right? Of course, you know the heavenly voice that comes out from Shemayim and says, David, it's so easy for you to split the field that belonged to someone else. Right? And just say, quick one word, Yachloku. Split it. Did you do some research to find out if that's the right psak? That's just the psak that makes you feel good? It's amazing, an amazing display of morality in the Gemara and Masechet Shabbos, after Nun Vav, that finds all kind of absolution for David, for Bathsheba. Anything you throw at David in the Bathsheba story, the Gemara knows how to explain it, that David didn't really sin. But this sin, accepting the Lashon Hara of Tziva? No. The Gemara can't absolve David of that. You believe it? Adultery, murder? No, it's none of those things. Right? Okay, but daring to determine to split the field because of Tziva's obvious Lashon Hara. I can't forgive that. Okay. Okay, next saga. Ubarzile Agilodi Yorad Miroglin by Avoras Amelech Hayardin Shocho is B.S. Hayardin. Barzile Agilodi, good guy. Right, he's the one who's supported David right in the beginning of the revolt with food and with wine. Right? All kinds of provisions. So Barzile Hagiladi shows up before David, Yerad Miroglim. Right? Notice the name of the place, Roglim. He said, Vayiragel, Miroglim, you see. Right? Vayavor es hamelech hayardein, l'shalcho es hayardein. He crossed over and to send David on his way, to remain behind. Because Barzili Hagiladi, as you're about to find out, was very old. Barzili Zokain Me'od, Ben Shmonim Shana. 80 is the new 60. But then 80 was pretty old. People didn't generally make it to 80 back then. Okay. Right, so Kilkel Es Hamelech B'Seva So. It says, "Oh, b'shiva so machanaim, kiish gadol hu me'od." Okay, at 80 years old, he was still supporting the king, still supplying the king with provisions. So the king wants to reward him. V'emar melech ha-barzilei, ata avor iti v'chilkalti oschoyim adibi Yerushalayim. How about if you come with me? I'm going to support you with everything you need in Yerushalayim. Whatever you have, leave to your heirs. I'm going to support you. Like the deal he made with Mephibosheth. V'emar barzilei ala melech, kama yemei shnei chayai ki aleis ha-melech Yerushalayim. How many more years can I expect to live that you want me to uproot myself and go to you and I put myself and live with the king in the king's palace. Wow. Right? I can't taste food anymore. Right? I have no sense of what's around me. Right? I have no time. I have no taste.
You haven't talked, I hope.
I don't enjoy drinking. I don't enjoy hearing beautiful music.
Whatever you want. You.
Right? So he says, why should I be a burden against the king?
I don't know. I can't go down right now.
So that's Barzilai explaining to the king why he doesn't want to go. Right now, in the Haftorah of Parshas Vayechi, when David tells Shlomo on his deathbed, I want you to get even with Shimi, I want you to get even with Yoav, right? But he also says, I want you to do chesed to Barzilai. Now I ask you, what's the definition of chesed?
Expansiveness, expansive kindness.
Correct, exactly. That's the Kabbalistic meaning of the word chesed. It's something that goes beyond, it breaks its bounds. Right? Emes is bounded, chesed is not. Right? That's why a chesed knows how to daven past his manim, and you know, it's more flexible. Right? So why is it chesed to give that David tells Shlomo, I want you to take care of Barzilai? That's not chesed. That's recompense. Following? You know what I'm saying?
Say that again.
Chesed, if Reuben does something good for Shimon, Shimon isn't doing chesed by doing something that good to Reuven. Right? Barzillai came with all that food for David. And then David on his deathbed tells Shaul, I want you to do chesed with Barzillai because of all the things he did for me in my time of need. I would just suggest that the reason why David calls it chesed melachem alav is because David gave him recompense here.
David
gives him some kind of recompense here, some kind of great acknowledgement of his help. And not to mention, he might have given him some monetary effects as well. Okay. But Barzillai says that I'm not good for any of this. There's nothing I can enjoy in life anymore. Right? Chazal's claim that for him to say this means that he was a glutton. He must have been a glutton in his lifetime. Right? Because when you're such a glutton for everything, later on in life, you can't enjoy those things anymore. I don't know. All right. But the Chazal say that this Barzillai was a significant glutton. The life of gluttony. All right. Okay. So Barzillai, with characteristic humility, says, come on, why does the king want to give me all this? No. It's just, thank you, but there's no way I can enjoy it, so you might as well hold on to it. Right? I find when someone important wants to give you a gift, I know it says in Mishlei, Soni Matonos Yechia, one who hates gifts shall live. But if someone important like this wants to give you a gift, it's almost foolish to turn it down. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The Gemara says, I don't know if anyone supports this here, but the Gemara says that if a woman gives a man a ring and he is sufficiently important, like he's a movie star, and she gives him a ring, right? So the Gemara considers that that's considered benefit on her part. When you give an important person a gift, you're gaining something. You're gaining their favor, you're gaining their trust, you're gaining whatever it is.
Okay.
So in order to get married, a man has to give a woman a certain amount of value. Well, she gets value for giving him something. Right? And here, even though Barzillai, it might have been smarter for him to just take the stuff from the king, let the king feel good. Nonetheless, he refuses it. Okay, if he was a glutton earlier in life, he has certainly derived and learned, demonstrated that he's able to move away from that now. Okay, he does, however, tell him, right? Yashav na b'chava amus be'irim kever avi v'imi. Let me just die and be buried together with my parents. My son, his name is Kimham. Very strange name, Kimham. Kimham. So let my son Kimham go with you and you can give him what you want. Okay. It's pretty smart, especially if Kimham was his only child, but okay, he's getting his son to be supported. Usually you have to support your child. Now he got the king to support the child. Okay. However, I think I'm going to stop here. Or no, let me just make a run for it and see if I can finish the perek. No, it's going to be rushing too much. Okay, I'm going to stop here where the king is told to give some kind of goodies to Barzillai's son, Kimham. Right? But in the end, when all is said and done, why didn't he just take the stuff already? Give it away, but take it. Be in goodwill with the king. The king wants to give you something, you take it. Right? Mara says that Barzillai had a point to make, right? He's trying to move away from his characteristic gluttony. And that's why, You know, you're Yigvah Yavar, you wouldn't take the stuff. Okay, let me review. Let me review that we see that David needs to be prodded by Yoav in order to get back with the people. The main theme of chapter 19 in this book is reconstruction. How can we build back the country? Right? After such a fractious event, this terrible civil war. We asked the question at the very beginning of the revolt, how could people who had the sentiment that they told David right here in this chapter, you're the one who saved us, you're the one, let's go back to me. Come on, if you really feel like that he's the one who saved you, why did you revolt and rebel in the first place? The answer is that people are sheeple. Right? Okay. Oh, thanks for reminding me. Trevor, I'm so sorry. This coming May is going to be a tough time. We have a wedding Monday, a week from tonight. And our son, Kanai Nahara Baruch Hashem, his wife is due in Israel next week. And we're hoping that if there's a bris, that we will go to Eretz Yisrael for that. So I'm not sure what night that'll be, but and I would love to Zoom from Israel, but right now it's 4 o'clock in the morning, so that might be difficult. But so I'm not sure what even the next 2 weeks will look like. But next week I know we have a wedding, and so I will. I'm hoping that I will see you 2 weeks from tonight, and that in some shape or form. And if not, well, but my intention is for the Shmuel Shir to indeed have some kind of review, perhaps. Some of my Shirim and Shmuel Bet are on YUTorah.org. I don't want to lose this slot of learning, but Rebbetzin just reminded me I do have that wedding. So Mazel Tov to Panina Dobin, who is a single in our community, who's getting married next week, and may she build a Bayis Ne'aman together with her husband. Okay, Chevra, we have Mamin Cheschenuch at 9:15. And have a great night, everybody.